This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
The last surviving remnant of the Iron Curtain, that strange psychological wall that used to separate the old democracies from the post-communist ones, is finally breaking down.
Václav Havel, the greatly respected president of the Czech Republic, addressing the NATO summit meeting in Prague. At the summit, the alliance membership expanded to 26, including 7 Eastern European countries, 3 of them former Soviet republics. Dan Shore joins us now. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
And let's start, Dan, if we could, with that meeting in Prague. As President Havel noted, no Soviet Union there today. There's not that Iron Curtain that used to separate East from West, the Western democracies from old tyrannies. So what is the purpose of NATO today?
Wonderful hearing Václav Havel, who speaks like a playwright. Yeah. So what was this NATO meeting all about? I think it was basically psychological. The president said that it was America's most important relationship, but I don't think that's true any longer. I don't think Europe is the center of America's universe any longer. I think in military terms, Europe has fallen so far behind America in technology that it's very hard even to integrate them in operational terms. So now the U.S. has given NATO an assignment, build a rapid deployment force, some 20,000 people that can be used in the war against terrorism. But in fact, NATO has become more a nostalgic symbol of the glory days of the Cold War.
Did President Bush get as much support as he wanted or needed from this enlarged alliance for a possible war with Iraq?
Well, you'll notice that as with the operation in Afghanistan, the Bush administration never tried to make this a NATO project. Mm-hmm. And it was probably for good reason. It did ask for, it did receive general support demanding the disarmament of Saddam Hussein and support for the UN Security Council resolution, but no support for any unilateral American use of force. NATO is not really a part of this.
Mm-hmm. There was a handshake that he exchanged with German Chancellor Schroeder, who had essentially, in many ways, campaigned against President Bush or his policies. Was that sometimes as a handshake just a handshake?
Well, what he didn't get was he had one-on-one meetings with other heads of government, and there was no one-on-one meeting scheduled, and so it had to be a spontaneous kind of handshake that took place. I don't think the president and especially his staff have really gotten over the way in which Schroeder, in fact, campaigned against President Bush, including the former Minister of Justice who compared Bush's tactics to Hitler's tactics. All that still rankles nice. So Bush scheduled no one-on-one meeting, did allow himself to be photographed, shaking hands with Schroeder and whispering something in his ear. And I think I'm not going to try to imagine what it was he whispered.
Very firm handshake, too, we
noticed.
President Bush met, albeit just briefly, with President Putin. What can you divine of what that meeting accomplished?
Well, it was, in general, it was a meeting that Putin had asked for to soften the blow of admitting these three Baltic states into NATO and thus putting NATO right on Russia's border. It didn't bring them too closer together on Iraq. Putin stressed at a news conference that he supports disarming Iraq, but only in the framework of the UN resolution, which means no unilateral action. Also, Putin made a point, rather oddly, of suggesting that the United States was off on a great tangent in Iraq and should be paying a lot more attention to Saudi Arabia and to Pakistan as accessories to terrorism. So what's to be understood is, I'll tell you, Putin's interests in Iraq basically run counter to American interests in Iraq. Mm-hmm. Why do I say that? Iraq owes Russia several billion dollars, but that's not all. If the United States ends up occupying Iraq and unplugs Iraq's oil exports, which are now under sanction, that could bring down the price of oil, of which Russia is a major exporter, and that could be ruinous to Russia's economy. And so I don't think that Putin wants to see a lot more Iraqi oil flowing.
Mm-hmm. A regime change in Iraq for Putin would mean a substantial change in the price of oil of Russia.
Well, the world price of oil, including Russia, and Russia really depends on a good oil price and therefore is not interested in seeing a lot more Iraqi oil flow.
Meanwhile, first contingent of UN weapons inspectors, led, of course, by Hans Blix, the Swedish diplomat, flew into Baghdad. Did you see anything significant transpire?
Well, I think basically they're sort of settling in. I think when they do start, maybe on Monday, they will start with rather low-key visits to sites that were already visited 4 years ago or more by the UNSCOM inspectors. I think the United States would like to see some more intrusive inspections in order to build up some tension towards December 8th, the deadline for Iraq to catalog all its weapons and the making of weapons, but they may not be able to get it that way.
107th Congress has left town, departed Washington, D.C. The Senate was already gone when the House held its last session on Friday. As we total up these things, President Bush could certainly count on a big accomplishment, including Homeland Security Department accepted and a big tax cut. What did Congress leave undone?
The last thing that Congress really left undone was extending unemployment benefits. And the result of that will be that some 800,000 jobless people will meet with Scrooge. Their benefits will stop on December 28th. Merry Christmas. Also, there is not enough money to keep Medicare going. The American Medical Association says that 42% of doctors will be dropping their Medicare coverage. Also, 11 of 13 spending bills needed to pay for the government in this fiscal year, which started October 1st, still need to be passed. Meanwhile, the government is frozen into living under the terms of last year's budget. And not even the war on terrorism is being adequately funded. They didn't pass enough money for the bioterrorism defense or for checking container ships by the Customs Service and so on. They're very good at establishing aims in Congress, but paying for it seems to be harder.
Even though this is a lame duck Congress that wouldn't presumably have to bear the price of running for reelection in the next few weeks.
That's right, but they went away and left things undone.
Let me ask you about the opposition side in Congress, because there is one voice among some others that has been noticeably speaking out more vehemently against Republican leadership in Congress and even this administration. That's former Vice President Al Gore.
Yeah.
Now, he's been on book tour, and we know what it's like to to be on book tour.
Yeah, but he's been doing better than I did.
Yeah, certainly, certainly in my case as well. What do you make of what he's saying and the way that he's trying to position himself? I mean, for all the talk that there's been over the past few years about, well, you know, who is this emerging Al Gore? What colors is he wearing? What is he saying? What do you make of his role right now?
Well, we're certainly seeing a much more visible Al Gore, who actually sort of hid away for a while after the bitterness of having lost the election when he had gotten the majority of the popular votes. Now he's appearing on almost every television show you can name and on National Public Radio with his wife Tipper, flogging the two books they've written, or ostensibly that's the reason for it all.
Offering them for sale.
Yes.
Flogging sounds a little severe, but all right.
Okay. The new Al Gore is a lot more spontaneous than the old Al Gore. David Letterman even says he's funny. So what are the chances that he will seek a rematch with George Bush, which, of course, is the big question? If you poll the Democratic National Committee and the Democratic elite, they mostly raise their hands in horror and say, no, 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 not Al Gore. But the interesting thing is that as he travels around the country, he's doing pretty well with ordinary citizens. You know, this is a guy who has spent a very large part of his life campaigning for election for one office or another. And I must say the temptation must be strong. So he says he will decide before the end of the year. I don't want to make any big bets, but don't count him out.
Thanks very much, Dan Shore.